I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
We're going to cause trouble.
Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything. So anyway, Farrell on the bench, what I was saying was, is that like Marshall, they're firing him at Wichita State. It's over. Like, you know, don't believe anything you hear about, parting of ways and amicably and all the rest. They're firing him. So the deal is, and I don't have anything against him. I don't know the guy. Right. So I'm just telling it like it is, like in terms of what the reports and all the allegations, I mean, they have to be confirmed and they have to be legit and documented because they fired him. I mean, how many people have to say you abuse them before they finally listen to you? It's unbelievable. It's the same thing. Like, this is not like Sandusky. But when, you know, Sandusky was busted, like how many people said that he was doing it before they finally believed that it was happening? When these kids start, narking on a coach that's being bad to him, you got to listen to him and like investigate the charges. Right. So what happened was when I was here and Mike Rice was coaching at Rutgers, my buddy played there. Mafia knows who I'm talking about. He was a teammate of ours. And this guy's a monster, 6'8", 260. No joke. He'll light you up and dunk in your face. And but when he was there, he got abused by this guy verbally and physically. He threw balls at him, at their feet, at their ankles, at their onions. The guy was insane. And they fired him. And all these kids got, you know, mentally abused by this guy. And he's finished. Okay. So somebody asked me today, what's going to happen to Greg Marshall? And I said, Carver High said he thinks he'll have a job in 18 months. And I said, I don't think he'll ever coach again at D1 because it's not like Bob Knight, who had 30 years of three national championships, Olympic gold, Pan Am gold. The guy had a track record. Greg Marshall did a great job at Wichita State, no doubt about it. But when you abuse players and you don't have that kind of Gucci resume or rap sheet that Bob Knight had, like his, like, coaching years were historical. One of the greatest coaches ever. Greg Marshall is not in that ilk. He's done a great job at Wichita State, but I think he's finished now.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so to wrap that up, at the very least, my point is this, is that like a guy like Bob Knight, who had a lot of allegations, and Neil Reed said he choked him and everything else, and there was a lot of people that were like, they'd had enough and they fired him. And, you know, he got zero tolerance from Miles Brand, whatever, and then they fired him. This is just off the top of my head. I remember it this way. It was so long ago, right? So Gerald Myers was his good friend, and he was running Texas Tech at the time, and he gave him a job, and he was back in D1 coaching college rack with the Red Raiders, and he loved Lubbock because Bob is a friend of mine, B, a hunter, a fisherman, a golfer, all the rest, right? That's his, that was his MO and his loves and passions. And so down there in Lubbock, he could, you know, fish, hunt, do everything. So he loved it down there, and he loved coaching down there, and et cetera. But the bottom line is, I think that he had the juice to have that kind, and the friendships and the connections to get back into D1 relatively easily after the Indiana debacle, which is what it was. It was a giant cluster forer, what happened to him in Bloomington with a guy that was on a witch hunt for him in Brand, who would later run the NCAA into the ground, and then he ended up in the ground. So the bottom line is, I think that Greg Marshall doesn't have that kind of juice. And I think that, and Mafia said this to me, in that it's a different time. It's a different era. It's a different year. It's a different phase of abuse. In other words, back then, you're screaming and yelling at kids, and there was no such thing as not screaming and yelling at kids. Coaches do it all the time. Tom Izzo does it. Frank Martin does it. There's a lot of coaches that scream and yell at kids. Back then it was normal. Gene Katie did it. I could go on and on with the Woody Hayes, Bo Schembechler. I could go on and on with coaches that yelled and screamed and cussed out kids. But nowadays, you scream and yell and cuss out kids, you're finished. Nowadays, you verbally assault a kid, you're going to lose your job. Nowadays, you physically assault a kid as a coach, you're done. And so I think what they did was that he, you know, abused kids, and they fired him. And now he's an abuser. And so in my view, and I'm sure I'll be wrong, he'll probably get a job, but I don't think he will. I don't think he's going to get one anytime soon. This talk of, you know, a year or two, I have a problem with that. I think it'll be maybe never. And it could be 5-6 years at best. But you know, I'm sure I'll be wrong, and he'll get another job, which is really demented, if you ask me. Mike Rice never got another job, and he was doing it, what, 10 years ago? I mean, I can't even keep track of it. It may not have even been 10 years, but that guy abused players at Rutgers, and he's finished. And so I don't see why a guy, once you're tabbed an abuser, once you're tabbed someone that does that, if you're a, you know, it doesn't matter. If you're a murderer, a rapist, you know, a pedophile, a sex offender, you're done. I mean, you're just done in this society, right? They're just going to ride that all the way to your grave. You're not going to get around it. I mean, what are you going to apply for jobs, and they're going to find out you did it. And that's, you know, the end of it. So I, you know, and I'm not suggesting that Greg did anything of that sort, but he definitely had allegations of alleged abuse on players. And it wasn't just at Wichita State. So all of his past came back to haunt him for his, you know, apparent treatment of players and the way he handled players and the way he dealt with them verbally and alleged abuse of players. And then some actions that were also tied into it, you know, outside of the gym, like he's getting in fights allegedly with students on campus. Like, what is that? Like, that's just craziness. And Mafia, what do you think? I mean, you're the one that just told me it's a different time. It's a different era. You're not going to get away with it now. And do you believe that he's got like a death sentence for his career of coaching based on what he's done and how he'll, I don't think, be able to run away from it?
We'll see how, you know, is he able to rehab his image, you know, in the future. I think he's definitely going to have trouble getting a head coaching job, like you say. Maybe someone's going to bring him on as assistant and try to help him out. Like, you know, one of his friends I used to coach with before might say, hey, you know, come on my staff and we'll try to, you know, rehab your image. But as far as getting a head coaching gig right off this, it's going to be very hard to do because even, you know, you can point at other guys that have done stupid things or, you know, pretty bad things like Patino and these guys that have gotten other jobs. I mean, the difference is, you know, those things with the allegations of them letting, you know, players get paid and these other things that happen, there's not really that much chance of you getting sued for that. If you're an abusive coach, you leave that school open to, you know, multi-million dollar lawsuits by players that played underneath him. They don't want that. That's one thing they don't want, is losing money in any way. So that guy is going to be a lot more dangerous than a Patino or, you know, some of these other guys, you know, was it Miley or whatever his name is down at LSU? These other guys that are probably going to get the boot soon for this, you know, Adidas and paying scandal. They're a lot safer to these guys than these other guys who are getting accused of abuse. So
what was his name? The guy, Wade Davis, is that his name? Down at LSU? Yeah. So let me ask you, I want to get into this now. So now that we've established...
Roll Wade.
Anyway, so here's the deal. I want to shift gears and talk about, I saw another thing they were talking about today that we discussed on Coast to Coast, and I've seen a little of it in the church tonight, is, you know, the situation with Florida State and how the mighty have fallen. But, you know, more so the, you know, injuries to top players. Then you get a wide receiver. They threw him off the team. Norvell threw him off the team, and I'm just going to save a lot of time. Nobody cares about who they are. Nobody cares about the kid that no one's ever heard of that they kicked off the team. Fair enough. And then the one that everyone has heard of is the quarterback. At the very least, you know, most people have heard of this kid Blackman, who was the starting quarterback, and then he got benched for another kid. And obviously, Blackman was not having it, and he's transferring from Florida State. And so I said today on Coast to Coast, I'm going to say it here. The reason why James Blackman got benched at Florida State was not because of Norvell, and it wasn't because of any reason at all other than he sucked. Okay. He sucked as a quarterback, and that's all there is to it. I said today he should have been a receiver or running back. I have no idea how that guy ever played quarterback at Florida State, because ever since they had him playing quarterback, he drove that program into the ground with his terrible play. I mean, obviously they had nobody better. Obviously they had nobody backing him up. They had no depth and no recruiting at quarterback. That's painfully obvious. But I see why he's running out of Tallahassee, because he wants to play somewhere. Well, go play in some hack school, because you couldn't hack it at Florida State, because you're never going to have a bigger opportunity than that, in my opinion, because everybody already knows how bad you were. I mean, no offense to the kid. I don't know him from Adam. I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm some tough guy or whatever, but proof's in the pudding. When is the last time you saw that guy do a thing in a football game for Florida State besides lose? I mean, he's terrible. So I don't care where he goes. He should go to Hamtramck Tech, because he might do well there. Little Sisters of the Poor. I don't know what to tell you other than Florida State has hit rock bottom. I mean, you know, people said that they were at rock bottom in their last two coaches that they've mowed through, and now they got Norvell in there. They've changed coaches so many times in the last decade that they can't even keep track of them, and they can't even fire this guy because they owe the last two guys for five more years each. It's so embarrassing what's happened to Florida State football. I said today, I'll say it again, they've become FIU and FAU. Central Florida is better than flat out better than Florida State now. Miami's good again. At some level, Miami's decent. You know, they're sitting there 5-1 or whatever, and then they're decent. I'll give you that. I don't think they're great. I think they're decent. Like losing to Louisiana Tech, getting shut out in a bowl game, that's embarrassing. So they're not back. They're just decent. They're not bad like Florida State bad. And I think Florida's the best team in the state in Gainesville. They got a great team, great quarterback, good coach, Mullen. I think Diaz got a lot of work to do to catch up to Florida. But I think Diaz is way ahead of Norvell at Florida State. And I think Florida State has become, no offense to anybody at FIU or FAU, I love Boca, but basically that's what Florida State's become. Florida State, a national champion, a power, has become nothing. They're nothing now. Like, playing them is a piece of cake. It's a piece of cake. It's like you pray to have them on your schedule because it's an automatic W.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
For all on the bench, I did want to talk about Russ and Harden, right? So Westbrook and Harden. Here's basically where I stood on it today in terms of my opinion on Coast to Coast on Sports Grid TV when I was talking about it. And I wanted to bring that over to the For All on the Bench side on the radio. If you weren't able to catch the show today, it's simple to me. No one has really talked about this, and I'm not trying to be smarter than anybody. I'm not trying to start anything, or I'm not trying to like outwit anybody, and I'm not trying to be goofy or anything like that with this. But I legitimately believe, and this is not Oak City, right? This is not when they played together when they were young, right? Because I think when you're young, essentially, there's some level of inexperience and stupidity involved. You're bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and new to the world, and new to the league, new to playing, and certainly new and green to veterans. You may be a star player or a scorer or an exceptional athlete or a top draft pick or the number one guy or whatever else. But that you still got to earn it in the NBA. You still have to really earn your burn, and you got to go out and prove to the veterans that you mean business and that you're going to, commit to the plan. Right. So I think that when they played together before, right. Am I wrong, Mafia, down in Oak City? Didn't they have Durant and Westbrook and Harden all playing together?
Yeah, they had them all together, and that was early in Russ's career. So, not Russ's career, in Harden's career. So, he was coming in, like you said, the young guy that was kind of just coming into someone else's team and playing his role, not the guy who was owning the team and, one of the best in the league.
Okay, so here's what I think happened. When they were young, I think they were not really dumb, but young and dumb. It was like I was and Mafia was. We all were. When we came out, we're green, and we don't know really what we're doing in the world. And you find out the hard way, right? So I think that now that they've been in the league forever and that they're, superstars and they're making fat bank and they got max deals and they're, rock star status and they're, famous all over the world. I mean, everyone knows who James Harden and Russell Westbrook are now. I mean, I think all over the world, people know who that is. And I know many people may not believe that, but I do. And I know that I think they're both great players. I love each of them for their own special flavors. Like, I think Harden's an ISO hero ball, total control scorer, and gets to the line better than anyone in the league. I think he gets more calls than anyone I've seen in the league. And I think he's an Oscar-winning actor on the basketball court. I think that guy gets more bad calls than anyone I've ever seen in my life. He goes to the line like nobody's business, and he's really good at it. Fair enough. And I think Russell Westbrook is probably one of the most explosive players I've ever seen. He goes to the tin like no other. He's got speed, hops. He averaged a triple-double for two seasons in a row. People say he can't shoot. How do you say that when a guy averages a triple-double? a triple double every night. The guy could score. He could do whatever he wants. They said he can't shoot from outside. And, you know, everybody talks tough about you can't shoot from outside. Let's see you try it, hot stuff. Let's see you go out and jack NBA 23-foot J's and see how good you are at it. I guarantee you, you're not shooting 30%. And, you know, he'll be up in 35, 40%. But you or your friends, you're shooting 10%, okay, from NBA range. It's no joke. So college is, you know, a couple steps in. High school is a couple steps in from that. So it's no joke. It's not easy to shoot NBA threes. It's a big J. Mafia knows that. So I think the guy is unstoppable. He can do whatever he wants, Russell Westbrook. But here's the problem I have. I think what's happened is that I think Harden doesn't want to play with him. I don't think Russell Westbrook wants to play with Harden. I think that everything that you saw last year between those two was all BS and an act. I think that was all phony. I think that they just played with each other because it is what it is. They brought him into Houston. They thought that having those two in the same lineup would make them unstoppable, but they were a small ball team. And I said today, I think Harden has no problem kicking it to Tucker and Gordon for threes. Any more than he's thrown it to any guy on that team over the years that could shoot threes. They've always been a three-point shooting run-and-gun team that chucks threes, and he's cool with that. But I think his game translates from beyond the arc, and I think it also translates, driving and getting to the line. I think he gets to the line, 8 out of 10 times he drives, he gets a call. And, I mean, literally, maybe 9 out of 10. He literally goes to the line more than anyone in the league. So I don't think he wants to give the ball to Westbrook. I don't, because he knows Westbrook is all about his own creativity and explosiveness and driving and creating his own like world of offense. I think Westbrook likes to do his own magic, and even though he's a triple double machine, not anymore, but he was. He can pass. He can do anything. He can drive and alley oop. He knows how to do it all. And I don't think that Harden likes sharing any fame with anybody. And, they got rid of him in Oak City, not because he didn't want to share the wealth, but because he didn't matter. Because down there, it was Durant, really, that became, and Westbrook, the stars. Harden was expendable. But when Harden became a, 35-point a guy every night, every game, that was his new forte, right? Becoming the superstar that just did it all. Nobody else did anything. He did it all. A couple other guys that have 15 or 17, 20-point nights. But this guy gave you 35, 40 every night, right? And triple doubles left and right and breaking scoring records and everything was – it's his franchise. It's his franchise. He's the player coach. He had a great relationship, in my opinion, with D'Antoni. Because D'Antoni was scared to death of him. He'd never say a word to him. So I don't believe that Harden for 1 minute wanted to share the wealth with Russell Westbrook at all. I think it was written all over his face, if you ask me. I think the two of them, I'm not sure if they could stand each other. That's really not my point here. I don't care if they like each other. This is business. This is professional basketball. This is about playing ball. It's not about being buddies. These guys all take a shower and head their own ways after games. They head home, kids, wife, the whole deal, lover, go out with other people, but they're not going out with each other and hanging out all day. You hear these stories all the time that, we want to be camaraderie. We want to keep the team together. And listen, when they're on the road, they'll go out to dinner. They'll go out clubbing a little bit together. They'll go out and do whatever together. But when they're at home, they're going separate ways. They got nothing to do with each other for the most part. I think, literally, that's the truth. And I don't believe for 1 minute that Harden wanted anything to do with Russell Westbrook. And I think Russell Westbrook, I think he didn't want to see Harden get all the juice and all the, touches and control the game every time. It was always about Harden with the ball. And I don't think Westbrook wanted to play with him. I don't think he wanted to play with James Harden because he's a ball hog and he's a game hog. And that's just all there is to it. And if I'm wrong, then why did he admit tonight he wants the hell out of there? He's like, I don't want to play here. And then he says it's because of the culture and he doesn't like the outlook for the future, which in Portuguese means he doesn't like James Harden. That's what that means, because I don't believe for 1 minute they like playing with each other anymore. Mafia Do you buy or sell that theory that they don't like playing with each other?
I can definitely buy that they don't like, you know, the other guy having control. They all want to have the ball in their hands. They want the shots. They want to have the, everything run through them. And you have two guys like that, it doesn't work out too well. You know, I bet Harden's missing CP3 now and how he would, you know, distribute and create and make the guy a better player. And obviously, we know Westbrook's not that guy. Like, he'll throw some assists, but he still wants the ball in his hands to make things happen. And I think part of it, too, is, you know, if they're going to play with each other, like, they could tolerate it if they know they're going to win. But now they're looking at the situation saying, all right, the coach is gone. The GM's gone. We have no salary cap room, and we got knocked out of the playoffs way too early again. Where is this going? They know it's going to be some tough times, and they don't want to be stuck with each other while they're losing.
Yeah, I'm fair enough with that, too. It's a great point. I agree with that, and all that is very much happening. But at the same time, he admitted tonight. Now, I'm not going to go digging for it because I just don't care. But I know he said that he wanted to be the guy, the floor general. He wants the ball in his hands at all times, and he wants to create everything, all plays, all buckets, all wins. He wants to be the guy distributing, finishing, giving, rejecting, running and gunning, and he wants to control everything. And on that team, he had no control unless Harden was sitting and he got the burn. And then he took over. And I think they did a lot of that. But I didn't think they separated church and state well enough with those two. I just didn't. I never bought it that they were happy together in Houston. But and everyone will tell you I'm crazy. I'm wrong. It's not true. That guy's nuts. Pharrell's crazy. He's always saying stuff. Bottom line is, if I'm so wrong, I mean, that divorce is happening right before your very eyes. I mean, you can blame me all you want, but it's happening. They're getting a divorce. OK, so that's over. And let me tell you what else. Mafia knows it's true. Back me up. Did I not say from like literally in the playoffs while it was happening that the minute they lose, D'Antoni's out of there and they're going to get rid of Morey too? But I thought they'd fire him. He left on his own. But did I not say that this team was going to break up like bad lovers? Did I not say I can't even believe that they'll keep D'Antoni or Morey?
You said it. You knew it was going to happen. I mean, there D'Antoni was on the outs the whole season. It's like if you don't win a title, you're out.
And I cannot believe, I guess I'm surprised. I am surprised that he got that big job as president of the Sixers. But he does know how to win, but that's with great players. I don't think he has them. Pharrell on the bench. So there's a lot of stories about the Rockets, right? Running everywhere. Here's one about their offseason with the departures of Morey and D'Antoni. And then The Athletic wrote these stories. Several different writers combined on these issues from The Athletic. So great job by them. But accountability as well as concerns from Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Austin Rivers. They were all complaining. They were all up in arms. Westbrook told his teammates that they needed to do better going forward during a losing streak following a loss to the Blazers. And then in the locker room afterwards, he was leading the meeting, went around the room, including what was wrong and what each player needed to do to fix the losing, including starting with himself. When they came to Harden, allegedly, he wasn't receptive to any criticism. Former teammates have described the culture as problematic. and it caters too much to stars. Gordon and Rivers both seem displeased with their roles. Rivers didn't like his minutes. Rivers went on a expletive laden tirade following a game where D'Antoni called for him to be substituted, only to change his mind and insert Damari Carroll. Rivers was barked at by Harden after he missed a free throw, and Harden said allegedly, I don't know if I believe this, that Rivers was distracting him standing on the bench on over on the sideline. Like, are you kidding me? I don't even believe that. As far as Tucker, he's been irate over his contract all season long. He wants a raise. So here's a guy with money issues, allegedly. And, you know, they talk on and on about how Harden hasn't returned calls from the Rockets brass because he's unhappy. He's not been included in decision making. And that's according to Kendrick Perkins of ESPN. So, you know, maybe all that stuff's true. So I believe in the Athletic and their reporters. They did a great job. And Perkins knows what he's talking about. Certainly a champion in his own right. But I just simplify everything. I'm really easy here. For me, it's just Harden and Westbrook don't want to share the wealth. They just can't stand each other playing with each other. There's nothing worse sometimes, I think, than two superstars on the same team trying to share that grapefruit. I mean, who gets the most slices, honestly? Because it's pretty obvious to me that that's Harden's team. And if you notice, Harden... Am I wrong, Mafia? When it was over, when Westbrook said he wanted to be traded, Harden finally came out and said, I'm staying. I'm all good with the Rockets. I got no problem here at all. I love the Rockets. I want to win. Let's go. So what that means in Portuguese is, thank God we're getting rid of him. I'm getting the ball 100% of the time now. And he doesn't care about anybody else either. I think he likes his teammates as long as they fall in line with his game. I mean, isn't that painfully obvious to everybody? I mean, honestly, you watch the Rockets play and lose every year. It's the same story. It's like a broken record. It's all about James Harden. None of those other guys matter at all. And I thought when they got rid of their big man, I thought that was really the end of them. Then they had no size, and they tried to sell the world that they could win with small ball. They're tripping.
Right, he's the guy in front, and they're just the backup dancers and singers behind him. They're just there to support him, and that's all that's their role is.
Do you think they should have kept Capella?
I absolutely do. I think that he was a guy that, you know, fit in well with Harden, too. It's not like this guy wasn't fitting the system or wasn't working well with him. Like, they loved to run the pick and roll together. He would lob it up to him, and that was their defensive presence. That was their rebounder. I mean, you know, you get to buy a little bit with some of these games and some of these guys where you're playing, you know, 6'8", 6'7", guys. But when you get down to it and you play the great teams like, you know, the Lakers and them, with guys who are athletic and big, you're screwed, right. And it showed.
When they were young, I think they were not really dumb, but young and dumb. It was like I was and Mafia was. We all were. When we came out, we're green, and we don't know really what we're doing in the world. And you find out the hard way, right? So I think that now that they've been in the league forever and that they're, you know, superstars and they're making fat bank and they got max deals and they're, you know, rock star status and they're, you know, famous all over the world. I mean, everyone knows who James Harden and Russell Westbrook are now. I mean, I think all over the world, people know who that is. And I know many people may not believe that, but I do. And I know that I think they're both great players. I love each of them for their own special flavors. Like, I think Harden's an ISO hero ball, total control scorer, and gets to the line better than anyone in the league. I think he gets more calls than anyone I've seen in the league. And I think Russell Westbrook is probably one of the most explosive players I've ever seen. He goes to the 10 like no other. He's got speed, hops. He averaged a triple-double for two seasons in a row. People say he can't shoot. How do you say that when a guy averages a triple-double? A triple-double every night. The guy could score. He could do whatever he wants. They said he can't shoot from outside. And, you know, everybody talks tough about you can't shoot from outside. But here's the problem I have. I think what's happened is that I think Harden doesn't want to play with him. I don't think Russell Westbrook wants to play with Harden. I think that everything that you saw last year between those two was all BS and an act. I think that was all phony. I think that they just played with each other because it is what it is. They brought him into Houston They thought that having those two in the same lineup would make them unstoppable. But they were a small ball team. And I said today, I think Harden has no problem kicking it to Tucker and Gordon for threes, you know, any more than he's thrown it to any guy on that team over the years that could shoot threes. They've always been a 3-point shooting run and gun team that chucks threes. And he's cool with that. But I think his game translates from beyond the arc. And I think it also translates, you know, driving and getting to the line. I think he gets to the line, you know, 8 out of 10 times he drives, he gets a call. And I mean, literally, maybe 9 out of 10. He literally goes to the line more than anyone in the league. So I don't think he wants to give the ball to Westbrook. I don't, because he knows Westbrook is all about his own creativity and explosiveness and driving and creating his own like world of offense. I think Westbrook likes to do his own magic. And even though he's a triple double machine, not anymore, but he was, he can pass, he can do anything, he can drive and alley oop. He knows how to do it all. And I don't think that Harden likes sharing any fame with anybody. Yeah, I agree with you, Moff. All right, so let's move on. There you go. I wish the Rockets were better. I really do. I've been on in Houston forever, and I like the city. I like the sports teams there. I seriously, but I mean, there's just so much drama there. It's unbelievable to me with the Rockets, with the Texans. I mean, I'm not even tripping. Don't even get me started on anything else, right? Let just leave it at that. Those two alone. And the Astros cheating. Are you kidding me? Like, I'd be here all day. I mean, but I'll give them credit. The Astros still, you know, made it deep into the playoffs and gave everyone fits, and certainly the Rays as well. So I respect what they accomplished, you know, without knowing all the pitches. They still did well not knowing the pitches. So I'll give them that. But I still didn't think any of them could hit besides Springer. I mean, honestly, he was the man in Korea. But I think the rest of them were bums. And back in the day, Altuve had some big hits in the playoffs, too. But he was terrible defensively. And he definitely didn't hit like he did when they won the World Series in 17 when they were cheating. He was a way better hitter when he knew what all the pitches were, like Chapman's fastball. So to win the game. So I don't. I'm not ever taking that back either, so screw you. Here's the deal. The bottom line is that Trevor Bauer and Shane Bieber won the Cy Youngs tonight in both leagues, right? And last night we were telling you all about Mattingly and Cash as the managers of the year. The awards are rolling out now, and Trevor Bauer is obviously very controversial pitcher. I think that's safe to say, right? Like, there's a lot of people, without a doubt, that in the game that don't like him. And there's teams that don't like him. And at the same time, he's a really excellent pitcher. There's no getting around that fact. He's very, I guess, analytic. He's very number-driven, science-driven, physics of pitching, arm angles, things like this. Speed. Of release from his hand, the point of which he releases the ball, where he releases the ball, how fast he releases the ball, the hand, everything about it, his torque, everything about the game is scientific to him, right? And he obviously was fantastic. Bieber was even better. The numbers were better. His ERA was better, everything. So all I know is they both deserved it, fair enough. And the question is, Moff, is where's he going to go? Because he turned down the qualifying offer because, you know, $18 million ain't going to cut it for Trevor Bauer. He's going to make fat money now. He's going to make, I think, you know, just under, frankly, Gerrit Cole money. I think he's headed toward that kind of payday. Because he's just gotten better and better and better. He's never gone backwards at all. He just keeps getting, you know, stronger and more effective, better numbers at every phase of pitching. He's dominating hitters. They all declined because they're going to get filthy rich. Forget about $18 million. They're going to be making $40 million. Braves re-signed Josh Tomlin. Yanks eyeing Andrelton Simmons as a shortstop solution. Too bad he can't hit. Don Mattingly, the manager of the year in the National League. Kevin Cash in the AL. Vin Scully is going to, I guess, do the audio version of the World Series documentary for the Dodgers. Suns interested in trading for Chris Paul. Yeah, I hope they like that 80-some million dollars they're going to owe him at his age. And the Thunder promoting assistant Mark Daigneault as their head coach. Very popular guy and did a great job in the G League as well and been rumored to replace Donovan for a while now. So a lot happening in Houston, A, with the Rockets, B, with the Texans. I saw today that the Texans fired their VP of communications, the first and only woman to head the PR department in the NFL for an NFL franchise. They told her she was no longer, quote unquote, a cultural fit with the franchise, whatever that means. I don't even have any clue what that's about. You fire this woman down there. That's going to lead to some problems, I would think. And as far as the Rockets go, Carver High, we have fans asking us what's going to happen with Russ and Harden, and are they unhappy with the state of the Rockets? You know what? I'm starting to think there's more to it than just what's wrong with the Rockets. I think there might be some semblance of truth to the fact that, A, they're not interested in Silas being the head coach. B, they may not be interested in his choices like Hornacek for assistance. And C, I think the thing that no one's talking about that might be true is I think that Harden doesn't want to play with Russell Westbrook. I think they tried that, and I think he wants nobody having that ball in their hands except him. I think Harden wants the pill at all times. He's a hero ball, ISO ball, 40 a game scorer, whatever you want to call him. That's what he wants every night. He wants to have 35 to 50 points, and he doesn't mind when Tucker and Gordon shoot threes as long as he doesn't have a look first. He is the first, second, and third option. Everything else is secondary to him. I don't think he likes watching Russ run around with the ball. I don't think he likes him having the ball, attacking the rim. I don't think he likes playing with him. This isn't their Oak City days when they were young kids and they didn't know any better. I think their egos are too big to play with one another. I think that the bottom line is Harden wants Russell Westbrook to leave Houston. That's what I think he wants to happen. I think Harden wants to stay. He wants Russ gone.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.